This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Terry Gouditis, owner of a company called MindStar Security. If you want to get a hold of her, just go to Google, type in MindStar Security. We've looked at security from all kind of aspects, mostly in cloud security and mobile security. What I want to do is rearrange the deck chairs here and talk about security from kind of a different perspective, from maybe the human being perspective, and what strategies my listeners can take to protect themselves, and maybe what lessons can be learned from 40,000 feet for an agency. And maybe there are people who are charged with security for an agency that aren't asking some obvious questions. And that's what we brought Terry in. Terry, why don't you tell us a little about your background, and then we'll start the tough questions.
Sure. Thank you for having me. My background is basically by trade. I'm a forensic psychologist, so I'm always looking at security from a human perspective. And I've, over the years, integrated looking at, again, the human aspect of security, physical security, and cybersecurity, and how those three components work together.
And I think this has a lot of impact for people who are listening who may be charged with doing hiring someone and trying to clearing them and look at their background. I'll hit the nail on the head. There are agencies who haven't changed their clearing process in 10 years. And things have changed in the last 6 months to impact this. And I think that's one of the topics we get into, of what to look for that you haven't looked for in the past. And what are the big things? I think one of the most obvious things are cloud computing, mobile, and I think a generation that is less concerned with sharing information. You know, that's a generational thing, isn't it, Terry?
It certainly is, because technology and handheld devices and everything has changed so much in, again, just the last 5 years, and even in the last 5 months. The integration of social media with physical security, handheld devices, has really changed how you have to look at your own personal security and your organization's security.
And I think that could be two focal points of the show, is social media and physical security. Many commercial organizations, and Terry has experience with commercial organizations as well, they kind of set up the silo. Well, this department does the physical security, and then these are the nerds over here. They do the IT security and social media. But that is setting yourself up for failure, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's very little that happens in the world today. I mean, if you think about your day-to-day life, getting in and out of your car, how many times you tap your cell phone, you're texting, you're emailing from your tablet, you've got devices hanging off your belt, they're in your purse, they're in your briefcase, and it's very, very hard to separate out, again, your devices, your handheld, and where you are physically, and how that impacts the security of an organization, because you're bringing your own device, even if you're just leaving it in your car because you're in a secured location.
So let's say we have Joe Sixpack, who's working for ABC Agency, and they have a smartphone, and there's information that is personal information that may be sensitive or secure. If there is an incident when they're on vacation, that can impact an agency or a company, can't it? So
absolutely.
Let's take a look at an incident and talk about how can we prepare for the incident, how to respond, and then what to do after we get hit. Maybe a identity theft. Okay, so Terry, we're sitting on a bus, and I turn to you and go, well, what three things can I do to prevent getting my identity stolen, and how can this impact my employer?
Well, one thing everybody has to realize, that identity theft is very easy. All of us have been on the metro, on the train, up to Amtrak, going up north or south, and you hear what I call the loud talkers, and or the screen showers. And because, again, we have so many devices and we're so willing to talk about, you know, who we are, our phone numbers, we're texting.
I live in McLean on vacation next week. Here's my house key.
Absolutely. Or I'm on my way to a meeting and I'm giving out my cell phone number because I'm on my way. And it takes is some listener on that train or metro to sketch that number down, Google you, get more information. And if they get to your Facebook page, maybe because it's not completely shut down or privatized to your friends, they can find out things like maybe your birthday because people have wished you happy birthday. So now they have a phone number, a birth date. They can Google you and maybe get your home address. And slowly but surely, through publicly disclosed information, attain a lot of information that people can then use to answer those secret questions we all have for our bank accounts.
And I think, you know, many people look at this as black and white. Well, your identity is stolen or it's not stolen. Well, I think there's a whole grayscale in there. Yesterday, I got a message on Twitter from one of my guests from a year ago. And this message was very strange from a person who is very, very responsible, had a high-level position in an organization somewhere. And I looked at it and I said, someone took this person's information and sent me texts that look suspicious. Mm-hmm. And so her identity wasn't stolen, but something was. Something got in somewhere.
Absolutely. And that happens with email all the time. I'm sure, you know, all the listeners have seen or heard of an instance where someone receives an email from someone they know. It's, you know, John Gilroy at... And they say, oh, I know John. And they open up the email and he and his family are stuck in Europe and they need $500 because their wallets and passports got stolen.
All got stolen.
And, you know, it looks like it's really coming from the person you know. And so you want to help them. And there the scammers have taken advantage because they've either corrupted or compromised that friend's computer. And now they're sending emails out from it. So, again, it's, you know, suspicion and paranoia, unfortunately, have to creep into part of our security posture.
No, I don't think it should destroy your life, but I think there are reasonable precautions that one can take. I mean, everyone's seen the ads about the metro. Don't, you know, be focused on your smartphone and sit next to a door in a metro. Someone's going to snag it. And what do they get then? I mean, they could get all kinds of things that you may or may not want to reveal to someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think with texting today... you know, going back to an incident, whether it's an identity theft incident or you witness some type of incident in your building, you know, sort of decades ago and maybe even 10 years ago, well, you maybe told a couple friends or your family when you came home. Now you text it, you tweet it, and depending on how many followers you have, that information can get expanded and, you know, exacerbated into many, many people knowing about something that maybe should have been kept very private.
Now, here's something innocent. I was at Georgetown last night teaching a class, and I took a picture, and I didn't post. I sent it to my wife. I said, look at this fancy building.
Yes.
I'm surprised they let me in. Now, that's pretty innocent, but I'm sure there's some people that might put it on Twitter or Foursquare and say, well, I'm downtown 10 miles from my house, and I'm not at home now.
Absolutely.
Well, what does that mean? Well, that could be an invitation to the bad guy.
Absolutely. And I think there are some social media platforms out there like Snapchat where a lot of people are lulled into thinking that, oh, well, Snapchat, well, the picture I take only lasts for 5 seconds and then it disappears.
Well, and we found out that that's not the case.
Exactly. And the other thing is even, you know, if those records were not being archived, how easy is it for me to receive a Snapchat, show a friend, and they take a picture of a picture with their cell phone? Now they've got a real photograph of it that can live and breathe and be posted anywhere. So even those things that allegedly disappear don't really. They still live forever.
Yeah, live forever. So let's take this person who I interviewed last year that limits it to 52 people. And there's something funny going on. So we know something's funny going on. What's the correct response? What's overacting? What's reacting in the appropriate level?
I think if you believe you're getting something that looks suspicious and you actually know the person, whether they're an acquaintance, a business associate, or a professional contact, reach out to them in a different method than what you received. So
it's
if you
email,
received
maybe a telephone call.
Exactly. Yeah. If you see a tweet or a comment posted on Facebook, reach out to them again through a phone call or a text or something that's different than that
like,
channel.
Like, Terry, this doesn't seem like you.
Right. Or did, you know, or ask them, hey, did you tweet that? That was interesting.
That really you? Yeah.
Or, you know, hey, you should email me next time and test to see if that really was that person.
And I think that a lot of this is swept under the rug because people don't want to brag about being digitally naive. Though that
yes.
didn't happen to me. Oh, no. Oh, I've been on Twitter for 2 years now. I know everything about it. Oh, really? Well, tell me. And
right.
and they're very reluctant to admit. It's like men. Oh, you can't lift that. Oh, yes, I can. And I don't care how much my back gets screwed up and I'm in the hospital
That's
for
right.
2 weeks. And they don't want to. And it's almost the opposite of they don't want to admit failure, digital failure. Oh,
absolutely.
You don't know technology, do you?
And I think most people have a very positive outlook, and they use these social media platforms for good. They want to communicate with their friends and their colleagues and their family members and really don't want to think about the darker side.
And there's plenty of dark side there. When we take a break, we can come back and talk about the dark side and talk about the dark market maybe and targeted attacks and spear phishing. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Terry Gouditis. She's the owner of a company called MindStar Security. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Terry Gouditis. She's owner of a company called MindStar Security. She has an interesting background in the federal government and in a lot of commercial organizations and helping them with I'm trying to be discreet here. You know, someone who's a security expert, what do you can't say anything. You say, well, she has a strong security background, and that's all I'm going to say. She's seen a lot of things that she's not going to talk about. I have a radio guest who doesn't want to talk. That's not good, is it? Well, before the show, we talked about some odds and ends, and we mentioned Wi-Fi slam, WhatsApp, Messenger, and collusion. And there may be people who are listening to the show who know everything about Wi-Fi slam. They can give me a 5-page book on it, you know, anything. But there's some people who don't. And I think that security professionals should be tuned to this. And I just think someone managing a network, someone who's about to hire someone, should be aware of these three or four different new things. So tell me about Wi-Fi slam. What exactly is that?
Sure. There are so many new apps coming out. I mean, every day you can go on and see different technologies. Wi-Fi slam is, in generic terms, an indoor GPS. We all know about GPSs where we wander around outside and we get a certain location from our smartphones or from in our cars. But it's fairly two-dimensional in the sense that it's streetwise and street view. What Wi-Fi slam, this quote indoor GPS, does is actually track you inside buildings. And can track the user's location allegedly within about 8 feet. Are you on the third floor, the first floor, the basement floor? So it's more of a 3D modeling of GPS.
So when you read something like this, you start climbing out the window and screaming, huh? I mean, this is not good. If let's say you had a client who someone was going after, and this client allowed this app to run on her phone.
Exactly.
His or her phone.
Exactly. And I think like everything else, when, you know, people take photographs using their smartphones and depending on what photo app you use, you already have GPS data and time and date stamp in that metadata of that photograph. And so now when you turn on your smartphone and let's say you have downloaded Wi-Fi slam, can you be tracked if, let's say, you get malware or a Trojan or something else on your smartphone where someone then can track you?
There's a book I read over the summer called Civility in a Digital World, and this is a woman named Andrea Workley, and she's an attorney, and she wrote about some things. And I don't want to sound sexist here, but many of the incidents she talks about would happen with women, single women, where goofy men would do things that would drive them crazy. And I think this Wi-Fi slamming, what if someone is pursuing you? What if there's some goofball coming after you? And I'll sound sexist. I have two daughters. If it's some goofy guy going after you, and all of a sudden he could almost pinpoint your location if he could use the system this way, couldn't he?
Absolutely. You've got instances of stalking, harassment, even some of the other social media platforms that have been around for a long time. Foursquare, where you announce yourself when you go into Starbucks. I'm here. I'm checking in. A lot of people, like you said, those creepy men, have used some of those technologies to look for women, look for dates, or if they're interested in where their ex-girlfriend, ex-wife have gone,
oh, yeah,
to absolutely monitor those kinds of sites to see where they're checking into.
Yeah. And there are listeners who work for the federal government who can say, well, I really shouldn't have to worry about this. But I think what you have to be is you have to be aware of the people who work for you, how they use phones and what they're doing, what they're not doing. If you see one of your employees with Wi-Fi slam on their machine, on their phone, and you say, well, what's that? And they go, oh, this is harmless. This doesn't mean anything. This is just a fun app that I put on there, and it's great. Well, you may want to come up with a policy for your group that maybe addresses some of these things. I mean, and this is it's a policy issue where a year ago, who worried about how many tablets you had? You're lucky if you had one. Now
there's
multiple tablets. Now multiple apps on phones, and maybe it would be irresponsible of a manager not to have a policy.
Absolutely. And I think for, you know, those in the federal government, those who in the military, in the intelligence community, the law enforcement community hold clearances, to be very careful of these types of things, because with, again, a compilation of data, I know where you're going because you're checking in Foursquare. I know a little bit about you because part of your Facebook account is exposed. I can see your tweets. And now I sort of know where you are if you subscribe to something like Wi-Fi Slam. Putting all those pieces together through, again, open source data is not that difficult.
I work for a small company in Dulles, and we started doing a lot of social media in the last 2 years. And I thought that social media would bring all the people from Washington, D.C. knocking on my door and I'd have a long list of customers. Well, what's happened is people in Australia come to our website and like what we have and want to do deals with us. Mm-hmm. And so our three biggest customers right now are out of town.
Right.
Nothing to do with local. And so what I'm thinking is that, okay, so someone McLean is tracking his ex-girlfriend in Alexandria. But guess what? This could be Alexandria, Egypt. It could be
right.
It could be in Japan, someone tracking someone in Poland. All of a sudden, this internet, it breaks down the barriers between bad things happening.
Absolutely. It's almost a form of virtual global surveillance.
And that's a strong word, and I don't want to get people flipped off. But I think it's reasonable that if you manage a group of people for the federal government or a commercial organization, you probably have to address the issue of, okay, if you work for me, we have to have a policy of what apps are on your phone, what aren't, because bad things can happen. Oh, you're just being too paranoid, John. Well, listen to the interview with Terry Gouditis, and you'll find out that bad things do, in fact, happen. Let's jump to another app, WhatsApp. WhatsApp Messenger. That's kind of a friendly little thing that people say in the street. So what is a WhatsApp Messenger? What's that app all about?
This is basically a cross-platform mobile messaging app where users who download this app can create groups, send each other unlimited images, video messages, audio messages. So the ability to use cross platforms on your mobile phone is what sort of WhatsApp Messenger does. It's sort of a consolidator so that you can communicate to many people using many platforms all in some one consolidated area.
So if I have an Android and you have an iPhone and my daughter has a BlackBerry, well, I can use this and I can share photos to all platforms instantly.
Yes.
I can share stupid, I'm here at the coffee
shop. That's right. Your
Vine
videos and you're absolutely.
Well, that's going to be good news and bad news candidates. So I think that, you know, I think there should be a policy for an employee that what apps are allowed to have on your phone. And you know, what about a corporate phone that my company provides you, Terry? Well, I should have some control or what software is running on that. You do on the desktop computer,
that's
for sure.
That's correct.
In fact, that those policies have been established for years and years and years of what can't run,
right.
Different levels of administrative rights, not administrative rights. But people don't think about that for phones.
Right. And to me, you know, this type of app, while probably going to be wildly successful because it's easy to use and you can communicate with a lot of people, to me, this is data leakage proliferation. It makes it easier for you to communicate, whether it's a positive message, a negative message, sensitive message, to many, many people across many platforms.
Collusion. There's a term that lawyers may use in this town. So in terms of security and mobile apps, what is collusion?
Collusion is a beta or experimental, as they're calling it now, add-on for Firefox browser, and allows you to see all third parties that are tracking your movements across the web.
Well, isn't this interesting?
Yes.
So let's say theoretically you're listening to the show and you have an ex-husband, and
yes,
you want to know if theoretically, Chris, this never happens, if he's stalking you or trying to figure out where you are. And this can happen in the business world and I think in I mean, if you work for AC, you got humans work for you, and humans have problems. And I want 40 hours a week out of you, Terry, for the next 2 years, and I don't want you to get distracted with bad things happening. And you can find out, Bayesian inclusion, who's tracking you, who's not.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, absolutely. I think, you know, it was probably devised by marketing professionals who were interested in the thought leaders and people who have a lot of followers and listeners. Just see what are they doing? What are they interested in so that they could, you know, again, take advantage of that marketing angle and attach themselves to the thought leaders. But of course, again, all the good can be turned into something that's very negative and possibly very dangerous.
So 2 days ago, I walked into Chinatown Coffee. It's kind of a strange little coffee place on 8th Street there. And I guess theoretically, they could say, hey, John Gilroy's at Chinatown Coffee. If he likes it, you should come in here too, because that's where all the cool guys go or
right.
something. I mean, but it's just, it seems innocent.
Exactly.
We just want to sell coffee. Oh, really? Well, you know, it can be used for nefarious purposes. There's a big fancy
Absolutely.
Word. But it can be, and I think people yeah. should be aware of it. And I think
yes.
if this discussion provokes anything, it provokes a policy setting for people who are listening who think about people who work for them and say, okay, I'm here to protect you because I want to get, you know, 52 weeks a year out of you, and bad things can happen if you're naive enough to use some of these applications.
Right. And I think the easiest way for people to start altering how they perceive their policies and procedural changes is to look at it from a personal and family perspective. How would this app impact me, my daughter, my family, my mother, my brother, and take those personal lessons and then bring them in-house to your organization?
We're going to have some more personal and private and corporate lessons after we take a break. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Terry Gouditis, owner of a company called MindStar Security. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Terry Gouditis, owner of a company called MindStar Security. We're ranging on many different topics. Terry has many years of experience with profiling people and working with federal as well as commercial security. And we won't mention any of her clients or anything she's ever done. Just trust me. There's a lot of important things that she has insight on. And let's talk about something that maybe apply to my listeners. So you're in a federal agency, and John Gilroy Walz is in, and you've got to have him cleared, and you trust someone to clear him. Now, my guess is that this clearance process might not have changed in the last 5 or 8 years, and some of the threats that are extant today may not have existed 10 years ago when that clearance form was handled. So what does someone do? I mean, who do you trust? What can you do? What can you do above and beyond the basic clearance? Or is the basic clearance process appropriate, Terry?
My personal belief is that the clearance process itself has to be reevaluated and looked at from the perspective of our contemporary culture, to include aspects of social media use, electronics use, virtual gaming, things like Second Life, World of Warcraft, to really include what the younger generation is doing as they're coming out of college, maybe getting newly cleared, entering into an intelligence job, a federal law enforcement job, or maybe working for a federal contractor, as well as the current population who have clearances right now, who are now beginning to engage in, again, handheld devices, apps, social media, and a lot of activity on the web.
What was that Tom Cruise movie, Risky Business, you know? And I think that there are students who leave college and get jobs at agencies who may go home in the evenings and do risky business, maybe risky activities that they don't even realize is risky.
Exactly.
I'm in this silly game where I buy and sell stuff with my friends in China and Brazil, and I just do this real fun. And how can that affect anyone? And, well, wait a minute. Let's put two and two together. You're working for the SEC now, and you have access to information, and people are finding out about it. And I think the clearance process has to be altered.
I believe so. I mean, if you just take one virtual platform like Second Life and you go in there, there are virtual embassies. And, you know, when we go back years and years and we talk about walk-ins to the Russian embassy and some of the former spies from our decades past who were walk-ins, is there really a difference between walking into a foreign embassy on Second Life and chatting with a foreign national who's part of that embassy? or walking into one here in Washington, D.C.
Interesting. Well, if we're going to talk about employees and security, I guess we got to talk about the big pink elephant in the room here, a gentleman by the name of Snowden. Now, he wasn't a federal employee. He was a contractor. And so federal employees got to go through a specific clearance process. My guess is that federal contractors have to go through a clearance process. And I'm going to shut up. You can talk for 8 hours on this. I mean, there's got to be what kind of clearance process did he go through? Was it appropriate? Was it not appropriate? Did he sneak by? I mean, how could you prevent something like this from happening?
I think that's one of the first steps that all the parties involved are going to have to contend with is, was his specific clearance process handled appropriately with the current protocols or not? But even with that, if that was still 100% done correctly, I still think the current process is not reflecting today's culture, today's behavior, and today's engagement of what people are involved with.
And I think with our transparent culture, maybe solving the problem can bring up other problems. If the Senate Defense Appropriation Committee starts investigating and asking questions, well, what kind of information are they exposing? It's like, well, this could be someone like yours' worst nightmare. It's like, no. You don't want to tell people about how this is all structured because that can leave people vulnerable.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, the not including what is happening online, what is happening electronically with handheld devices, apps, social media. A lot of people spend more time on the internet, chatting on Facebook, posting stuff to Google Plus. Who are your friends on Facebook? Are they Americans, non-Americans? Are they citizens, not citizens? Do you even know? Many people have upwards of 400, 800 friends on Facebook. I personally find it hard to believe that you know all 800 people really personally. And if they're on the internet, kind of like that old cartoon we've all seen, is it a dog?
Yeah. So you read the headlines and, well, the Senate is just going to, we're going to just eliminate all system administrators. So that's the answer. Get rid of 90% of them. Wow. You know, if your car breaks down, you don't, you know, disable every car in your neighborhood. I mean, right. It's like, well, you have to have system administrators. Maybe you don't call them that, but there's got to be a reasonable approach. And I think maybe there has to be an alteration in how these people are vetted or cleared. The question is how and who and what and how serious can it be? I mean, you almost can't put anything down in writing anymore. It almost has to be, well, you're cleared for 6 months and come back and see what new threats are available. And we'll see if you're cleared for those. How complex is that?
Extremely complex. And I think that reflects the ever-changing world that we're seeing, where, again, new apps, new social media, new vectors of vulnerability are popping up every day, certainly every month. But one thing I do believe can be done is if it's a systems administrator or someone who has access to, let's say, a lot of sensitive data, is looking at the compartmentalization of that data. So maybe not get rid of all the sysadds, but start limiting what they have access to, but still allows them to do their job effectively.
So Manning's in the news, Snowden's in the news. What can a federal agency do to decrease insider threat? So one guy, military, one guy is a contractor, but there's still there. One guy's insider threat, but you can almost say that Snowden was insider threat as well because he was vetted. So what can an agency do?
Well, one thing they have to institute, and this is through the entire sort of counterintelligence and BI process, whether it's on the forms you fill out or the polygraph that's taken or the different types of background investigations that are done. No one ever asked Snowden, I don't believe, again, this is my personal knowledge or lack thereof of the case, you know, Mr. Snowden, do you use social media? Were you posting anywhere? What have you said? He had no instruction and no policy to follow of what he was allowed to or not allowed to engage in.
Interesting policy question. Last year, my wife and I redid the kitchen, and we used a group called Counterintelligence. We thought that was pretty funny.
Yes.
No, Counterintelligence, that's funny. And you pick out the marble, and everyone's happy, and you got to have special colors, and it's great. But seriously, a lot of this, the people who are working in counterintelligence are ecstatic and saying, oh, this is great, because all of a sudden things are popping up and they're gathering information that we never suspected. This has got to be a nightmare for a lot of your colleagues.
Yes.
And so how do you prevent? I mean, how do you vet someone, and what kind of controls do you have? Is it a policy thing? And if you're working for an agency, do you trust the vetting that's done by another group?
It's hard. I mean, when you're vetting humans and you're asking them everything from their financial data to their asset ownership to, you know, have they ever engaged in, you know, drug use behavior or criminal behavior, and people still have the choice to put down either things that they have done, or if they're, you know, hiding money in their Cayman bank account, not to put it down. And I think when the clearance process needs to be expanded to really understand someone's online persona and online usage, you're still leaving it to that person to disclose honestly, this is what I do on Facebook, this is my Twitter account, yes, I have Google Plus circles and hangouts, and I have YouTube, and I talk to this guy, and I play, you know, whatever game it is, and he's in Germany. And so the same types of disclosure that's done for foreign nationals, finances, criminal behavior, still has to be disclosed, and you have to get online and understand online behavior.
And that's really critical, understanding online behavior and some of the implications of it. And I think there's always going to be human beings that are going to be bad actors, bad
Absolutely.
Players. And we'll take a little break here and maybe compare this with back in the good old days of James Bond and Jean Le Carré and old school spying and new school spying. And are there lessons that we learned back in the 70s that we can apply to today, or are the lessons all brand new and have to be changed every 6 months with the new technology coming up? And there's a Samsung Watch going to be released next week, mm-hmm. and there's a new iPhone coming out. And what about this Galaxy tablet? And in 6 months, we're going to have three more new products, maybe 30 new products, and things have to change to respond to that. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Terry Gudaitis, owner of MindStar Security. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Terry Gudaitis. She is the owner of a company called MindStar Security. And she has spent many years in the federal government working on security concerns, and she's worked with commercial organizations on security concerns. And that's a pretty much oatmeal introduction, isn't it? She's done a lot of things in a lot of areas and can't talk about it. Well, we can talk in general about concerns and in general about apps and mobile phones and identifying yourself and what federal agencies should worry about, not worry about, and how to protect yourself. Many of my listeners are involved in social media, as dangerous as that could be. And I write a blog, and I'll write a blog about this interview. You can go to Google, type in John Gilroy blog, you find it. You can find my Twitter handle. My Twitter handle is @RayGilRay, and I'll be tweeting about my activities. And I suspect you don't have much activity in that area. Is that correct, Terry?
John, that's actually
As
true.
As a matter of fact, you know, you don't. I wonder why.
It's interesting. You know, the first letter of business for me is confidentiality for my clients.
So,
and as many times as I can change the names to protect the innocent, I err on the side of confidentiality and don't spend a lot of time blogging about what my clients' issues are.
Well, that's kind of interesting. But if you want to find her, you can go to her website and learn more. MindStar Security, and there's probably a lot of filters and firewalls there, but there's ways to get more information. I'm kind of fascinated with your perspective on these things. You know, when I get people in the studio here, I always say, well, this person is an expert on Windows, and what kind of phone do you have? Oh, I have an iPhone. Oh, really? Or we get someone in who has a BlackBerry. Go, oh, really, a BlackBerry? That's kind of fascinating. So I think many of the listeners are saying, oh, Terry's got this strange background, and she knows everything about security. Well, what kind of stuff does she use? And so I'm going to ask you these 10 questions.
Sure.
And maybe from a security perspective, maybe someone will learn something, or maybe someone will throw away their phone or whatnot. So So the first question is about a personal computer. That mm-hmm. sounds like an old question anymore. When did you get your first personal computer? What year or how old were you when you got your first PC?
I got my first PC, and this is because my father was the chief of marketing for IBM back in the 1970s. And when they rolled out the first home computers,
I got one. Wow.
So it weighs about 75 pounds, and you know, boot with DOS, and I still have that old paperweight.
Wow. That's good.
So it
was very secure.
Absolutely. No, there's not a person on the planet that can read my disks or get into that machine now.
And when did you get your first cell phone, or do you have a cell phone? I assume you have a cell phone.
I absolutely do. Probably, I'm going to guess in the early 90s, 90, okay. 91, something like that. I did have one of the old clunkers, again, probably weighed about 50 pounds, that you put in your car.
Wow. Well, it's
in the sort of pseudo suitcase.
So you do get some nerd points after all. Now, we know you don't have a Twitter feed. You know you don't have a personal blog. Yep. We know that. And I'll ask the dumb question and roll on the floor laughing when I ask, do you use any online personal backup services?
No, I do not.
I didn't think you'd be a big fan.
I have a lot of redundancy and backup internally, but I don't use outside services.
Yeah, I would be shocked. I have an app on my phone, and it automatically backs up. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I have a Droid.
Interesting. Now, that's a surprise. Yes. That fooled me on that one. And how many apps do you use, like, every month on that?
I probably use at least 10 to 12 apps regularly. I probably have upwards of 60 on my phone.
Hmm. And we were cruising around your house tonight. How many tablet devices would be just sitting around?
I'm going to say six.
Six?
That sounds
insecure, doesn't it,
to me? Well, there's my better half, too. So he's responsible for at least half of that.
Well, blame him for all that. And I know this is another stupid question to ask a security expert. What social networks are you involved in? Foursquare, right?
Well, you know, I do have accounts and most of the social networking platforms, but it's really for what I call research and education for myself. I don't personally use them. I use them to learn about how these applications work, how these platforms work, how easy it is, what do the default settings look like, so I can really instruct my clients.
So you're active in social networking, but no one would know that.
That's right.
And the last question, last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic.
Wow, you do get some nerd points here. You know,
It was on my Kindle.
Yeah, it's kind of up there. You're moving up the nerd.
And I don't know if it's nerdy or not, but it was a cookbook.
It was nothing wrong with that. I'm a big fan of cooking. I made a paella on Saturday, so I like me some cooking. We've ranged on all kinds of different topics here, Terry, and it's awful hard to focus in on one and get specifics. But we can look in general about what's happened in the past and maybe look at what's going to happen in the next 5 to 7 years. So from the perspective of a federal IT professional, let's put a federal IT hat on you and work for a civilian agency. And so where do you see this heading in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, would you start seriously considering having some social media policies for all the people who work for you? Or should you trust the vetting that another organization does for your employees? Or where is this heading in the next 5 to 7 years from my listener's perspective?
If I were king and if I were in charge of a large either federal or commercial organization, I would absolutely have my own policies. I think even if you look across the board at the federal agencies, each one has a different mission. Each one has a slightly different slant on how they contribute to national security and safety. And so I think each individual unit, even within an organization, needs to look at what their needs are. But I would highly suggest to have your own internal policies, regardless of what the official clearance or CI policies are.
Because I work for a small company, and I kind of feel responsible for my employees. I want to make sure they have safe cars, and mm-hmm. I want to make sure that they don't drive into work when it's snowing, and I want to make sure that they're protected, and maybe that's paternal, but you know, maybe it is paternal, and you want to protect them. And from a selfish perspective, you know, I don't want someone getting hurt. I want Terry getting hurt, and we can't work for 2 weeks. You got a broken leg. I mean, that's going to affect me.
And I think the byproduct of having your own policy is that's a training platform for you to use. And sometimes it's just a matter of educating and making people more knowledgeable about what they're using so that they are choosing their own safe route.
I'm trying to get DISA in the studio to talk about their app store. I think that would be a fascinating topic.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten anyone to confirm, but apparently it's a political issue. Anyway, there's app stores out there. If you look at app stores, there's some danger out there. You know, I read a figure this morning that there's a third-party store that has 7,000 dangerous apps on mm-hmm. it, and they're mostly Chinese-based.
Yes, not surprised.
Now, I don't want to point the finger, but I see this Chinese thing pop up constantly in the area of security, and probably a good precaution would be very wary of certain activities in maybe that part of the world. How's that for jingoistic statement, or but it seems to be true, huh?
I think anytime you release control to another organization, whether it be a cloud organization, and now we're going outside our country to a whole different culture, a whole different way of doing business, a whole different motivation to do business. We have to question why and how much of that outside support are we actually going to allow ourselves?
So if you have an employee that goes to an app store in China and downloads some funny app and puts it on their machine or on their handheld device, that can impact the security of your agency, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
So that's where the training comes in.
Absolutely. So again, you know, setting a policy and then having corresponding education and training with that policy, because people don't know. Maybe that Chinese app store, I could buy a similar app there for $5. It would have cost me maybe on iTunes $15 or whatever the comparison is. But it's worth paying that little extra to get something that's a little bit more proven and a little bit more safe.
Do you foresee GSA having an app store and all federal agencies buying their apps from the app store because it's approved? Is that even a good security? I mean, is that having one central store, is that even a good security policy to have? I don't know.
I think to some degree, it's going to have to go in that direction, whether, again, the organization's split off and GSA has maybe a main store and then another three-lettered organization has their own, you know, app store or what have you. But I think they're going to have to look at apps that are only allowed, you know, internally to their people. I think computer towers and even laptops are slowly but surely dwindling.
They're gone. We just have 30 seconds left to give you a quick yes or no answer. Passwords. 5 years from now, people still going to be using them? Is it going to be biometric based? Passwords going to be a thing of the past?
I think passwords are going to definitely dwindle. Much like their computer tower and laptop friends. And with different apps, I think there's going to be biometrics embedded in those apps so that when you turn on your iPad or your iPhone, instead of doing the security pattern, you may just be putting your thumb there or your eyeball or whatever is going to be offered. But I think it's absolutely going to go in that direction.
So old geezers like me are going to sit around the fire and say, I can remember there were desktop computers and passwords, and no one's going to believe
That's
me.
That's right. And 5 1/4 inch disks.
Yeah, no one's going to believe that at all. We're going to have to end the discussion here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Guest in the studio today is Terry Gouditis, owner of a company called MindStar Security.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.